Beth. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA One of the Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, Dan Friedel has a story on an American girl who earned her PhD at age 17. Anna Mateo reports on a now-permitted health claim for yogurt producers. John Russell has a story on how elephants say hello. Dan returns for a story on how AI is helping a woman regain her voice. Later, Jill Robbins presents the everyday grammar lesson on prefixes in stories about protests. But first,
Dorothy Jean Tillman II of Chicago, Illinois, took her first college class at age 10. This month, she became the youngest person to earn a doctorate in integrated behavioral health at Arizona State University. When she completed her study program, she was 17. Arizona State professor Leslie Manson told the television program Good Morning America, "It's a wonderful celebration, and we hope that Dorothy Jean inspires more students." And she added, "But this is still something so rare and unique." Her friends and family, though, call Tillman by another name, Dorothy Genius. A genius is a very smart person. When most students her age were still in middle school, Tillman took classes through the College of Lake County in Northern Illinois. She studied psychology and completed her associate's degree in 2016. She earned a bachelor's in humanities from New York's Excelsior College in 2018. About 2 years later, she finished her Master of Science degree from Unity College in Maine. In 2021, she started work on her doctoral degree at Arizona State. Most of her work has been done online while living at home. Tillman told the Associated Press that she credits her mother and grandmother for her educational success. "Everything that we were doing didn't seem abnormal to me or out of the ordinary until it started getting all of the attention," said Tillman. "But she did not get to do all the normal things for young people. I didn't have the everyday school things like school dances or spirit weeks or just school pictures and things like that," she said. She did find time for a dance program and started an organization called the Dorothy Genius STEAM Leadership Institute. STEAM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Math. The program helps young people interested in those subjects during school breaks. Now that she has finished her studies, Tillman, who is now 18, plans to work on raising money to expand her organization. She hopes to bring it to other places beyond Chicago. Manson, the Arizona State professor, said Tillman is creative and energetic and that she is a true leader. Her mother, Jimelita Tillman, said she is proud of her daughter's ability to deal with success while making good choices between taking part in social activities and her studies. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, This is the Health and Lifestyle Report. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration recently permitted yogurt producers to make a health claim on containers of their products. Yogurt is a food made from milk and special bacteria. The claim is that eating yogurt might reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes, a health problem linked to how the body uses sugar for fuel. Type 2 diabetes is believed to affect about 38 million Americans. Danon North America is the U.S. division of a French food company that makes several popular yogurt products. In 2018, the company asked the FDA for permission to make what is known as a qualified health claim about yogurt. In March, the FDA said it would not object to such a claim. The food agency said that there is some evidence to support the claim that eating at least 900 grams of yogurt per week might reduce the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. However, the agency said there is not significant scientific agreement about the claim. A qualified health claim means that the health effects have not been supported by wide scientific agreement. Food producers are permitted to make some claims about the healthfulness of their products, but they also must include additional information to prevent misleading the public. The FDA has permitted qualified health claims on dietary supplements since 2000 and on foods since 2002. The policy formed after the FDA faced legal action in the 1990s because it did not permit food companies to put any health claims on products that the agency did not approve. Lawyers successfully argued that such bans violated free speech rights guaranteed by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Rather than fight in court, the FDA created a new term, separate from authorized health claims. These claims, the agency says, are supported by scientific agreement. Examples of qualified health claims include claims that eating some kinds of cocoa might reduce heart disease. Another example is that cranberry juice might cut the risk of repeated urinary tract infections in women. In the case of yogurt, Danon submitted information from studies that observed people over time. The yogurt company found a link between eating yogurt and fewer signs of diabetes. The FDA agreed that there is some credible evidence that eating yogurt as a whole food has good health effects, but not because of any one nutrient that it contains. In other words, there is no direct evidence that yogurt can prevent diabetes. There is only indirect evidence that eating yogurt may be connected to reducing signs connected to an increased risk of the disease. The FDA says that it will not object to a qualified health claim rather than authorizing it. Critics question the use of such a claim. They say it is not based on research that proves yogurt reduces type 2 diabetes risk. The Center for Science in the Public Interest is a nonprofit advocacy group based in Washington, D.C. It is critical of the qualified health claim related to yogurt. It said no single food can reduce the risk of a disease that is tied to overall diet. It even warned that the claim might raise the risk of diabetes. The center said people might eat more yogurt products that include added sugars, including cookies and pretzels, even if they do not have the claim on their containers. Marion Nessel is a food policy expert at New York University. She said qualified health claims based on limited evidence are ridiculous on their face. I'm Ana Mateo.
People greet each other in many ways. They might say hello in different languages. They might physically do something like shaking hands, giving hugs, or exchanging kisses. Elephants seem to have many greetings, too. A recent study gives new information about these greetings, including how greetings differ depending on the animal's sex and whether they are looking at each other. The study was based on observations of African savanna elephants in the Jafuta Reserve in Zimbabwe. Vesta Eluteri of the University of Vienna in Austria was the lead writer of the study that appeared recently in Communications Biology. Elephants live in a so-called fission-fusion society, where they often separate and reunite, meeting after hours, days, or months apart, Eluteri said. Elephants are Earth's largest land animals. They are highly intelligent, with strong memories and problem-solving skills, and complex communication. Female elephants of different family groups might have strong social bonds with each other, forming bond groups. Earlier studies in the wild have reported that when these groups meet, the elephants perform special greeting ceremonies to announce and strengthen their social bonds, Eluteri said. Male elephants have different social bonds from females. Male greetings may serve to ease possible hostility. Male elephants greet mainly by smelling each other, reaching with their trunks, Eluteri added. The recent study gives details on around 20 movements tied to greetings. It showed that elephants mix these movements in exact ways with sounds. The different sounds are described as rumbles, roars, and trumpets. The study also showed how smell plays an important part in greetings. Elephant greetings include behaviors unusual for humans, including releasing body waste. Elephants can also release secretions from a special gland. Elephants may greet each other by making gestures meant to be seen, like spreading their ears or showing their behinds. The creatures also use movements producing special sounds, or they may use movements that involve touching other elephants. Movements involving touching are known as tactile gestures. Eluteri suggested that elephants appeared to know what other elephants can see. They preferred using visual gestures when their partner was looking at them, while tactile ones when they were not, Eluteri explained. Greeting behavior has been studied in a number of animals. Many other species greet, including different primates, hyenas, and dogs, Eleuteri said. These animal greetings help guide social situations by reducing tension or confirming social bonds, Eleuteri added. The new research builds on earlier studies of elephant greeting behavior. The 9 observed elephants, 4 females and 5 males, were semi-captive. That means they freely moved around their natural environment during daytime and stayed in structures at night. Greetings used by the female elephants closely matched the behavior of wild elephants. The greeting behavior of the male elephants appeared to be different from wild male elephants. Wild male elephants are often alone, forming loose connections with other elephants. The temporal gland is midway between the eye and the ear. That gland plays a part in elephant greetings by releasing a substance called temperin. Temperin contains chemical information about an elephant's condition. Elephants often use their trunks to touch the temporal glands of others. Eleuteri said elephant body wastes contain chemical information important for elephants, like the identity of the individual, their reproductive state, or even their emotional state. Maybe they don't need to tell each other how they're doing, as they can smell it, Eleuteri added. I'm John Russell.
Lots of people are concerned about the ability that artificial intelligence, AI, has to copy their voices. When AI is used to make false recordings of things that a person never said, it is called a deepfake. However, more and more stories are coming out about how AI is helping people who can no longer speak regain a version of their voice. For example, country music singer Randy Travis recently released his first new song in over 10 years with the help of AI technology. Travis suffered a stroke and can no longer sing. The technology is also able to help people like 21-year-old Alexis, Lexi Bogan, from the eastern state of Rhode Island. Bogan used to love singing along with songs by her favorite musicians like Taylor Swift and Zach Bryan. She was a singer in her school music group as a teenager. If she was spending time with friends, she would be the loudest during a discussion about politics over a large fire in the backyard. But a surprise diagnosis changed all that. Last August, doctors removed a tumor from the back of her brain. The surgery was a success, but after doctors removed a tube used to help her breathe during the operation, Bogan had trouble speaking. Bogan is working with therapists and has regained some ability to speak, but there is no sign that she will ever be able to speak like she used to. Last month, Bogan got her voice back in a way. Experts created a tool for her using AI. She uses a text-to-voice app on her phone, so she can now do things like order her favorite coffee at Starbucks. She uses it by writing words in her phone, and holding it up at the coffee shop so servers can hear her. The app uses OpenAI's voice tool. Programmers trained the app using a 15-second sound recording from a cooking video Bogan made as a teenager. Most of the video had cooking sounds, so that is all they could use, but it was enough. Bogan's doctors say Lexi's case shows why AI can be helpful. Dr. Rohaid Ali is training in neuroscience at Brown University's medical school. He called Bogan a trailblazer. He said the technology can help millions of people with brain injuries, throat cancer, or other diseases that prevent a person from speaking. Fatima Mirza is another doctor working on the project. She said, "There is a risk that AI technology can be used by bad people, but we can't forget about the patient and the social good." She said, "The technology permits Bogan to have something close to her true voice." The doctors had already worked with OpenAI on an earlier project. When they found out the company wanted to test their voice generator to help patients, they thought of Bogan. Bogan said, "It's almost like a part of my identity was taken when I lost my voice." She said she was starting to forget what her real voice sounded like before she started using the app. The app makes mistakes, but people who know Bogan do not seem worried. They are just happy to hear Lexi's voice. "I get so emotional every time I hear her voice," said her mother, Pamela, with tears in her eyes. Bogan said, "It helped boost my confidence to somewhat where it was before all this happened." She said she uses the app about 40 times per day. The doctors are working with other patients to gather voice samples, and they hope to bring the app to other hospitals around the world. But right now, the app called Voice Engine is not publicly available. Other AI companies, however, are making their voice cloning services available to entertainment companies or other organizations. Jeff Harris is OpenAI's project leader for Voice Engine. He said the company is very limited in who we're giving the technology to, because they want to be sure everyone whose voice is being used has given permission. Bogan believes the technology will progress over time so that when she is older, she does not have to depend on the voice she had as a teenager. She is excited that she is contributing to a change that will help people who are currently using robotic-sounding voices. "For now, even though I don't have my voice fully back, I have something that helps me find my voice again," she said. I'm Dan Friedel.
Last week's Everyday Grammar, we looked at prefixes in reports of student protests against the war between Israel and Hamas. Then we asked our readers to use prefixes from that story to write about their experiences with protests in their own countries. Our reader Kaori from Japan wrote to us about her father's experiences with student protests. She begins, "My father experienced anti-war demonstration against Japanese military reestablishment after World War II when he was a university student. First, let us consider some small grammatical corrections. The phrase anti-war demonstration needs an indefinite article, as in an anti-war demonstration, or it needs to be plural, as in anti-war demonstrations. This is because it is the first time the demonstrations are being described. Remember this rule. Definite or indefinite article plus singular noun. Definite article plus plural noun. Using the definite article can be optional in some cases. Another correction is to the phrase Japanese military. This is a singular noun phrase, and it should have a definite article before it, as in the Japanese military. The phrase the Japanese military reestablishment might be unclear to a reader who does not know a lot about the history of Japan. We can change this statement to make it a little easier to understand. Rather than the Japanese military reestablishment, we suggest using a prepositional phrase, the reestablishment of the Japanese military. This kind of possessive structure can help clarify that the process of establishing the military again is being described. Among the prefixes Kaori uses in the statement, we find anti, which means against, and re, which means do again. Kaori might rewrite her statement. My father experienced an anti-war demonstration against the reestablishment of the Japanese military after World War II when he was a university student. Kaori continued, now he is over 80 years old and says that it was some stupid memory because he didn't have any anti-war policy and reforming unstable society after war. Here we have the prefix un, which means the opposite of. A formal way to say how your father sees this experience is, he looks back on it with some embarrassment. You say he didn't have any anti-war policy, but usually we talk about a government or organization having a policy. Speaking of an individual, Kaori may rewrite this statement. He looks back on the protests with some embarrassment because he did not hold strong anti-war opinions. The next phrase, reforming unstable society after war, is a little unclear. It might mean that Kaori's father did not understand the need to reform Japan's society, which was unstable after the war. A clear way to say this uses the noun form instability, where the prefix un changes to in. Then we can use the conjunction nor to connect two negative statements. He looks back on the protests with some embarrassment because he did not hold strong anti-war opinions, nor did he understand the instability of Japan's society after the war. Kaori's next statement is, young power and enthusiastic mood at that time led him to march with his friends near U.S. Navy camp in Yokosuka. Let us correct one word choice first. The verb let does not fit well in this statement because it means to permit someone to do something. Led works better because it means to cause someone to do something. Note that we can express young power and enthusiastic mood with the shorter phrase, youthful energy. And remember our rule about the definite article. We need the before US. To describe a large group of military structures, we usually use base rather than camp. We should use the adjective form naval instead of the verb form navy. Putting these changes together, we can say, his youthful energy led him to march with his friends near the U.S. naval base in Yokosuka. Thank you for writing to us, Kaori. It was good for you to talk with your father about his youthful experience with anti-war protests. And we are grateful to you for sharing it with us. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.